We are elated to have Home Field Apparel sponsoring Gopher Gridiron Radio in 2023. If you want to save 15%, use the promo code GG23 at homefieldapparel.com. Most importantly, the Home Field Apparel is absolutely worth it. It is some of the most comfortable gear, and it's some of the most styling retro gear you can find anywhere on the interwebs.
I swear to you, Luke, I saw about 10 different Home Field Apparel shirts meandering amongst the people on Thursday night. I actually went up to one of the guys who came up to me while I was walking around. I said, "Hey, great shirt. Where'd you get it?" And I kid you not, he said, "I heard it on your podcast. Use the promo code."
Awesome. And he saved that 15% because he used the promo code GG23 at homefieldapparel.com. And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to PJ Fleck does it to the Nebraska Corn Cobs once again as Minnesota comes back in a fashion I haven't quite yet seen at Huntington Bank Stadium in some time. Gave me a lot of flashbacks to 2019, quite frankly. As Minnesota overcomes a 94% Nebraska win probability at its peak in the fourth quarter there to absolutely stun Matt Rhule in his first game in a 13-10 victory. It wasn't pretty. There's a lot to get into, but the beauty of this, Luke, is joining us here once again this season is now the founder or co-founder, that being, of Dinkytown Athletes, my second cousin. For the umpteenth year, ladies and gentlemen, please give a little bit of a clap in your car while you're mowing the lawn, whatever you might be doing on this Labor Day weekend, to Mr. Derek Burns. Derek, I'm glad to hear the tones of your voice once again.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you having me back. And always excited to talk college football and the ever-changing landscape. And it was a fun game to talk about here against Nebraska.
All right, so you know, Derek, it's been a hot minute since we've had you on and recorded, and you are the co-founder of Dinkytown Athletes. So tell us kind of what's going on now. Just give us a high level overview, because obviously, if people are listening to this, NIL is important, and you know, you have a direct connection now directly to those that should be Dinkytown Athlete members.
Well, yeah, I appreciate you asking the question. I've been very busy. You know, this new industry or of NIL is evolving always. But what we're learning is, you know, with the coming of fall sports each year now is when things really ramp up. Trying to, you know, helping guys with merchandising and deals and getting content and delivering things to the fans. And so it's a busy time of year. But I guess I'll also mention, you know, what's shaping up is there usually for each sport that you want to support, there's going to be one or two times a year that are going to be more beneficial to become a member, to make it and a contribution. And this is one of those times for football. We're right in the middle of a membership drive that goes through Thursday, September 7th. So if I could, I would just plug that if you're considering jumping on board and supporting the Gophers NIL effort for football specifically, if you become a member during this time period, or you upgrade your membership, or you make a donation of $100 or more, you're entered to win a whole slew of good prizes, giveaways, what have you. If you can check our Dinkytown Athletes Twitter account, our X account, you can see what those are. But, you know, premium tickets to Michigan football game, a signed or from PJ Fleck, signed footballs from PJ Fleck, player merchandise, bobblehead dolls, all kinds of different things we're giving away. So check that out if you would. And again, this is one of those one or two times a year where you can kind of maximize your impact if you want to become a member or make a contribution. But other than that, the other thing I'd mention too is we have a member tailgate coming up for the Eastern Michigan game. So Anybody who is a member will be invited or is invited to that. So again, if you want to become a member now, we'll have a tailgate before the Eastern Michigan game. It's free for members. We'll have food. We're going to provide barbecue for those that show up. Also free for kids 14 and under. So if you're a fan that wants to, again, support the NIL effort, but also be able to interact and talk with other Gopher, like-minded Gopher fans at a fun atmosphere, that's an opportunity for the September 9th game. And if you have kids or grandkids, we plan to have some of the basketball student athletes attend that, both men's and women's. And that's a great opportunity for kids to, you know, take pictures, get autographs, meet the players, adults too, if you want to meet the players and shake a hand or what have you. So should be lots of fun. And yeah, now's the time if you want to hop on board and support.
All right. Yeah. Thanks for the update, Derek. It's obviously you guys have made a lot of progress. You know, and you know, a number of the athletes are getting deals, et cetera, and that's great to see. And you know, a number of them are here because of it. We won't need to delve into that, but in general, excited to have you back and get your thoughts on the game. In typical fashion, let's jump right in into the offense. So to summarize this game real quickly, Minnesota won 13-10. In the fourth quarter, they were down 10-3. They forced four turnovers, probably the biggest thing to note. They forced four turnovers, Nebraska forced one. And more importantly, you know, the offense maybe wasn't amazing, but the defense was very opportunistic and really did a great job in the important spots. So with that, I do think it's a good time to talk about the defense. We came into this game knowing that they were going to be losing a lot of key contributors. And Ryan, we actually got our first injury report, and gosh darn it, it was accurate. And we learned that Cody Lindenberg and Darnell Jeffries wouldn't be playing.
We did. Welcome to the availability report of the Big Ten era, where 2 hours before kickoff, Minnesota and whoever the opposing team is will be submitting an availability report to the Big Ten, which then becomes public knowledge. It was funny to see Minnesota actually take it seriously. And then on the flip side of things, Nebraska and their 150-man roster only listed two players on the entire injury report. So, you know, I was actually standing next to somebody in the press box asking some questions about it in terms of what are the reprimands if you don't take it seriously. And essentially, it's a public reprimand, potentially, hypothetically, if you list somebody as out and they don't play, but there's not a lot of repercussions here. So I'm going to be very curious to see how each one of these individual teams continues to use it, I would say, because if some teams are being honest, some teams aren't, we will continue to see how that continues to go. But that was the big news, was Darnell Jeffries is listed as out. I will go as far as saying I don't expect him to play at any point this year because of a fall camp injury, which is unfortunate. We can get to that on the defensive side of the ball as well. And then Cody Lindenberg has a soft tissue injury from what I've been told. And I was actually asked here on Friday morning, asked one of my good sources, I go, how quickly do you think he can come back? And there's a lot of optimism that he will be back for the North Carolina game. Minnesota really wants to make sure that he's right for that game to take on the Fighting Drake Mays of the North Carolina Tar Heels. So that would be the good news there, Luke, is those would be the two really big injuries. And I'm sure a lot of people are going to have questions about Chris Hoppenbell as well.
All right. Yeah. So let's talk about this Gopher defense. So on the day, only giving up 10 points, 295 yards of total offense, 114 through the air, and 181 on the ground. Nebraska averaged 4.9 yards per carry. Ultimately, the storyline here, guys, is the fact that, you know, the time of possession was pretty equal, but the turnovers really told the tale of this game, right? The Gophers offense, while it was able to maintain some drives to a certain extent, wasn't able to translate that into points, which really put the defense in some advantageous situations, adverse situations. And then ultimately, it came down to the defense to make plays, and they did time and time again. Maybe let's start with the scheme, Derek. You know, what was Nebraska trying to do, and how was Minnesota able to try and neutralize that, and most importantly, turn that into turnovers?
Right. Well, you know, Nebraska, surprise to nobody that scouted Jeff Sims. They definitely want to use him, you know, in the running game. That was where they were most effective. I think they tried a bit to disguise their passing game, because what we saw as the game went on is that just wasn't their strength, and that's not going to be their strength. That's not Jeff Sims' strength. So they didn't want to be real one-dimensional, but as the game went on, they were kind of forced to be that way. But they wanted to use the quarterback's legs to open things up, create a horizontal running game, with QB power, counter, things like that. And just as an aside, I'm really am going to be interested to see if that young man can stay healthy through a Big Ten season. They ran him hard. He took a lot of hard hits. Didn't look at all like he got banged up, but this is game one, and what you're able to do in the Big Ten over a 12 game schedule is not necessarily the same that you can do in other conferences. So it's going to be interesting to see if they rely on him to the extent that they did. But that was what Nebraska was after. Minnesota, a lot of what we've seen. I mean, this is a Joe Rossi defense. So, the fundamentals are the same. They like to play a lot of zone. They mixed in some man, and that interception at the end of the game was a really good play call, and also a fantastic play by Newbin, and we can break that down. But I would say differences, we saw more blitzing, and I don't know if that's a symptom of the players that they have on defense and they feel more confident, or if it was a symptom or a combination of just a disrespect for Nebraska's passing game, where they thought they could, put the secondary on more of an island and use more pressure and blitzes in both passing and running situations. And I think to good effect. And as the game went on, you saw that more and more. So slowly but surely, I think we're seeing a little bit more aggressive play calling, at times. And then also I was pleased with the pass rush being more aggressive. I actually was wrong in predicting before the game. What Minnesota has done with a running quarterback or a quarterback that's able to scramble in the past is they've stayed very vanilla with their pass rush, particularly out of their defensive ends. And they're doing that because they don't want the defensive ends to get too far upfield and create a lane for that quarterback to tuck it and run. And they didn't do that. They stayed very aggressive with their pass rushes, again, mixing in a blitz here and there, but being pretty aggressive with the defensive ends. And I think we saw that, saw the end result of that was more pressure. And as the game went on, more sacks.
I think the only thing I would really add to that before I kind of want to take it to a different direction is we've spent so much time in this off season, I should say, lamenting the pass rush with four last year. Man, to be able to see guys like Kyler Baugh and Devin Eastern, you look at on that first interception from Tyler Newbin, why did Jeff Sims maybe have more of an errant throw than he anticipated? Because Kyler Baugh and Devin Eastern were right in his face, plus Chris Collins, the UNC transfer, didn't get too far upfield, which didn't allow him to break the pocket, makes an errant throw. Tyler Newbin's right there. I mean, we saw Ja Joyner get a sack on a nice spin move. You saw Jalen Logan Redding get one. Danny Strigow get one. And that was in a game that I think Derek would agree Minnesota wasn't exactly pinning their ears back trying to get to the pass or trying to get to Jeff Sims, that being just because he was so prolific with his legs. So I was encouraged with that, especially considering that was Devin Eastern's real first time getting Big Ten snaps. Chris Collins' first time getting real Big Ten snaps. Now, obviously, I think Eastern has probably a much higher ceiling there, but just the fact that it looked encouraging in game one from the guys we wanted to see it be encouraging from, the Jalen Logan Reddings, the Danny Strigows, the Ja Joyners of the world, that hopefully this upcoming week when Eastern Michigan comes to town and Minnesota faces maybe a more statuesque quarterback and gets themselves in these second and third long situations, you'll get to see more Anthony Smith out on the field with these guys to try and generate a pass rush. But to Derek's point, it was fascinating for me to see that in the first game of the Rossi 2023 era, it was clear in the second half, they were daring Jeff Sims to beat them with his arm. Obviously he wasn't able to do that, but just to see Rossi get a little bit more aggressive with brand new linebackers everywhere out there. Also just kind of screams to me how much trust he has in them, because to Luke, you mentioned Cody Lindenberg being out for the game. Minnesota, obviously, we graduated Mariano Sorry-Marin. Donald Willis from last year, a rotational players at Western Michigan. Same thing with Braylon Oliver. So the guys you saw out there last night, Maverick Baranowski, never had gotten significant snaps like that in a Big Ten game. Same thing goes for Devin Williams. Same thing even goes for Ryan Selig, the Western Michigan transfer that they took. You know, they had Maverick at Mike. They had Devin Williams, a Will linebacker. And they actually put Ryan Selig at that Sam spot. But even Minnesota opening the game in a 4-3, Derek.
Yeah.
Who is Joe Rossi becoming?
Yeah, they gave both teams, actually, I know we'll get into the Nebraska defense, I think made a concerted effort to stay unpredictable. You know, whether that was trying to confuse the quarterback or just, you know, try to sneak in a blitz or a different formation just for, you know, for the point of confusing. That was, I think, definitely a tactic that both defenses employed.
So I did have a question for you, Derek. You know, often in first games, especially when you don't know much about your opponent, there's not a lot of history, right, of them being at a school, you see a lot of adjustments in the second half. From your perspective, did you notice a lot of adjustments from the Gopher defense from half one to half two?
Yeah, I think Ryan nailed it. I think once they were able to determine that there wasn't the passing threat and maybe the deep threat that they had to respect on the same level as some of the other quarterbacks they're going to see in the Big Ten this year, I think that gave them the confidence to be more aggressive with the front seven, you know, and to even in running situations, be able to get guys on some run blitzes and get them in the backfield and get some disruption, which was good to see, you know, because then you're not reading and reacting. It kept guys aggressive. But yes, in the second half, did see them. And then towards the very end of the game, mixed in some, you know, I'll just talk about it now. The final Tyler Newbin interception, great play by Tyler, of course, you know, ended up jumping the route. But the key to that interception was Minnesota had been in zone coverage for most of the game. And on that particular play, which was kind of odd that they ran it on a second and six, they went to a man press exchange blitz. So they went man press on the outside, single high safety Tyler Newbin. They blitzed the middle linebacker and dropped the outside linebacker to the middle hook zone. So that's the reason why the quarterback threw that pass, because the middle linebacker blitzed and he threw hot behind it over the middle. Now, Tyler knew that. He's smart. He knew that they were goading the quarterback into throwing that, so he jumped the middle route and intercepted it. But great play call at the end of the game. They kept that in their pocket the whole game. I don't think they had showed it any other time. And again, fooled the quarterback into making that hot read throw and got the interception at a key time.
All right, Ryan, if you look at this Gopher defense, you know, in the first half, I mean, it's about as good as you can set up, right? You have a punt, then you have an interception on a 7-play, 33-yard drive. And then, you know, you have the 11-play, 58-yard drive towards the end of the half. And then you goad them into another interception, just another bad read and throw. But it couldn't be much better. But now you transition to the second half, and they score a touchdown in two plays, albeit a kind of fluky touchdown in that the execution wasn't flawless. But there were a couple of times that we saw in this game where misdirection got the better of the Gophers.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's tough to put a lot of blame on what I wrote and I'll continue to say is the most discombobulated touchdown in the history of Lincoln Bank Stadium, where it's a failed throwback that's not failed. But here's the context of this is Justin Wally is on the bottom of your screen or on the home sideline there. The moment that he sees Jeff Sims not catch the pass and essentially bat it forward, in his mind, he's thinking, okay, it's a dead ball because it's just an incomplete pass at that point. He never hears a whistle. Now, you can blame him for that, certainly, if you're going to blame him for anything. But in his mind, the play's over. Well, obviously, the pass was behind the line of scrimmage, and even though Sims batted the ball forward, picked it up, and then threw it, I mean, it was just a very, very strange play. Now, the thing I kind of want to – I mean, yes, they struggled on some misdirection things, but it's more so they didn't know what they were going to run. I mean, we saw a triple option.
Oh, for sure.
We saw quarterback power. But the thing that is remarkable about that performance last night to me is I tried to kind of echo it earlier, but I really want to hit this hard, you know, put this home is – those were three brand new linebackers. You had a brand new safety in Darius Green getting his, you know, one of his first career starts in that spot. You saw Aiden Goosby in there when Darius Green got looked like banged up with some cramps or something like that. Plus, It appears that he's the passing down nickel Darius Green is. So he slides down from strong to be the nickel, which allows Aiden Goosby onto the field. And I know I got a lot of questions about this. No, Bryson Coleman is not injured. He's just the direct backup to Tyler Newbin. He still was on special teams. But also, I know everybody only knows him because obviously he was the Pinstripe Bowl MVP. So everybody's like, well, he's really good. Yeah, I think Aiden Goosby's got a chance to be pretty good too. And so does Minnesota, which is why he's got the role that he does. And you look at Trayvon Jones coming over from Elon. Obviously, he's played Division I football, but in his first Power 5 game, leads the team in tackles, has an interception. You see Tariq Watson in his first career significant action when Justin Wally was dealing with some cramps in that second half. And he looked the part, being able to funnel things back towards the center of the field, looked pretty good in coverage, was able to chase down Jeff Sims in the open field too. I understand Nebraska's passing offense is really bad, but this is still a very capable offense is what I will say. And the fact that Minnesota was able to do what they did in terms of the result on the scoreboard with 10 points is remarkable to me just because of all the new faces, including, say, even Jack Henderson getting his first time in the Power 5, getting reps last night. There were so many new guys that how many times, Luke, have we seen? I mean, think back to Tyler Newbin early in his career.
That's a good point.
He got his feet wet for the first time. Or in game one back against Ohio State when Minnesota had to throw in their backup safety and then they got obliterated. Minnesota was using a bunch of brand new players last night and they didn't get obliterated. And not only that, they looked pretty dang good. So, I mean, part of why I think, Luke, you and I are so, I guess, optimistic that they can at least get to 7 wins this season.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're looking at it. It's because the floor on the defense is so freaking high that if and when they get Lindenberg back here in the next week or two, you add him back in there. Plus, as all of these guys continue to figure out their roles, that's what has me excited, Derek, is the number of new faces on the back 7 that got their feet wet and they didn't look like some of the Gopher teams of yesteryear in the Fleck era in game one where they just looked completely out of sorts. That's encouraging to me.
Yeah, and I think we've talked about this concept before, but this idea of depth of talent everywhere. I mean, we've had, if you've been a Gopher fan for a number of years, you've seen talented defenders. I mean, we've had Antoine Winfield, we've had Carter Coughlin, we've had Thomas Barber, but I just don't think that team-wide across 11 starters on defense, there's been the depth of talent, you know, and that's, I think, the difference that we're seeing in the last, year, season or two, and it's really becoming evident. And, you know, what stood out to me, the biggest surprise, positive surprise for me coming out of the game was how well the linebackers did. If you hadn't known about an injury report or, previous how players, what their reputation was coming in, et cetera, that jumped out to me. I mean, I would be saying Minnesota is really good at linebacker coming out of that game. I mean, Maverick Baranowski, he missed a couple. He didn't finish on a couple of plays. He missed a tackle, which Nebraska turned into an explosive gain. He also missed a sack early where he didn't, wrap up, didn't chop his feet and get the sack. But that's a first game probably. I think he gets that ironed out. But his ability to get his read and fill very quickly is what makes him a fast player. You know, we tend to focus all the time on measurables in football. What's his 40 time? What's the vertical? What's the bench press? Things like that. And that's obviously very important. But being able to get your read on defense and fit and close quickly, it also creates speed. And that's what jumped out to me with Maverick was his ability to get his run read and fit. I mean, instantly put him in the backfield a number of times, and it was just because his read was that quick. I was impressed by, basically the linebackers plus Trayvon Jones and Justin Wally against the run. The amount of speed on the edge that the Gophers had was something that I don't think we've really seen. There were a few times when Nebraska actually got leverage, whether it was, from a reverse or a quarterback breaking the pocket or what have you, where in years past, the Gophers just wouldn't have the speed to chase that down, and it would end up being, a 5-10 yard gain where they're able to chase that down on the edge and it's a 2 yard gain. Mm-hmm. So it's just, again, depth of talent is what stuck out to me.
Yeah, I want to touch on that depth of talent. So one, this is likely a function of PJ Fleck being in year seven, right? Having built and had and sustaining a culture and bringing in guys and developing players. The other thing is the Gophers have, the jury's still out on this season, but they've been pretty good in the transfer portal, right? Especially for defenders and bringing defenders in. And they've been able to build some of that depth of talent and fill gaps. Ryan, you know this better than anyone, given you cover the recruiting, but they identify weaknesses and try to shore those up for the next season. And not saying that they're void of weaknesses, but I do think, to your point, they were able to find some experienced guys like a Jack Henderson who's played some football, etc. You know, this isn't a freshman per se like Tyler Newbin was when we think back to that 2020 season when he really struggled. I don't know. That's my perspective. It's a little bit different than that example you use, but ultimately you're right, Ryan. This is a lot better with a bunch of new faces.
I mean, it is. I mean, you got transfers at every level that contributed last night. I already mentioned Chris Collins. We talked about Ryan Seeley. You got Jack Henderson back there. And that's where, with this program and the way PJ Fleck wants to continue to build it, it's still going to be 80%-ish, maybe a little bit more, high school players that they want to develop into higher ceiling guys. But you need to make sure that you have the floor of the transfers essentially coming in to patch the holes of when Braylon Oliver and Donald Willis leave, or when Flip Dixon leaves. You want to be able to have guys like that. Now, I would also say another question I've been getting quite a bit is, Ryan, have they gotten an answer on Craig McDonald's waiver? My answer to you, the listener, is no. And I promise you, when we know, you will know. Ryan, how come the NCAA hasn't ruled on this yet? Because they're the NCAA and they don't live by anyone's rules. I don't know what else to say at this point. Is Minnesota frustrated? Yes. Is Craig McDonald frustrated? I'm sure he is. But we don't have the answers to necessarily those questions. Now, the thing I want to ask Derek about is, Derek, ultimately we've talked a lot about the depth of this defense, which is important to touch on here. But also the stars came to play on Thursday night with Tyler Newbin trying to do his best Antoine Winfield Jr. 2019 impression in game one. Just his ability to play center field is up there with some of the best safeties I've seen. Obviously, with those two interceptions last night, physicality to come down and cover somebody or hit somebody in the box, to run with somebody 50 yards down the field like we saw last night as well. Plus, you have a guy like Justin Wally make plays in open space near the line of scrimmage in the run game, and then comes back after battling cramps in the second half there to strip the ball to give Minnesota some momentum. It's very clear to me, and especially once Lindenberg comes back here, that Justin Wally and Tyler Newbin look like they're on a path here that could make it a very fun season for Joe Rossi.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Luke brought up right away that probably one of the bigger stories is turnovers. They were plus three in the turnover differential, but it would be easy to mistake that by thinking that that was just strictly mistakes on Nebraska's part. And 100%. One of those interceptions arguably was. But to your point, Ryan, that fumble, that was not a mistake on the ball carrier's part. That was 100% Justin Wally recovering on a play and knocking it out. And obviously the Tyler Newbin, well, both interceptions, huge credit, but jumping the route on the blitz we talked about. I mean, that's Tyler Newbin making plays. And, you know, we often talk about, and I hope people aren't turning this off because I've repeated it too much, but we talk about a blend of consistency and big plays. You know, usually to be successful on one side of the ball, you need both of them, but you for sure need one or the other. And I think it was fair to say that probably neither offense developed consistency throughout the whole game. I mean, the score indicates that you know, neither of these teams were moving the ball up and down the field. But it was Minnesota that had a lot more big plays. And that was, I think, the difference. And most, you know, many of them turnovers. But we've seen that, you know, again, if you've been a Gopher fan for a number of years, we've been on the other side of that so many times where we play consistent. We maybe punch above our weight. We hold our own against a more talented team. but we just don't come up with enough big plays. And I think it was flip-flop for this game.
Yeah, Ryan, I thought you bring up a good point, and then the Stars came to play, especially on defense. In the past, I've been a person that mutes the TV. I'm trying to be a better person and listen to the commentators and take in different perspectives, because I usually get frustrated by commentators. But Joe Klatt said something as the game was ending, that, you know, in the end, in late game situations, you know, it isn't always about scheme and it's about players, right? And in this game, I think that was evident throughout, to your point, both defensively and offensively, right? We'll get into that later. But, you know, your Stars really made the plays, like you said, and I think that's a great, great call out by you, because it was Newbin, Wally, etc., that really were the difference on defense.
How does it feel complimenting me? I don't know how to feel right now. I feel like I should just take this, clip it, go down, and just leave.
Yeah.
This is the nicest you'll be to me all year.
You know, new year, new me, man. I'm trying to be a better person. I'm changing my best every day. So,
but
no.
Just think about the ceiling that this defense can have, hypothetically.
If you can get
Tyler Newbin and Justin Wally, and then once you get Cody Lindenberg back, and if your defensive line continues to potentially make progress, and you can get consistent contributions, I'll say, from Jalen Logan Redding, Kyler Baugh, Jod Joyner, Danny Strigoi, potentially Anthony Smith and Devin Eastern. And this is why, and I'll say it again, the floor for Minnesota is a lot higher than people think, because if your defense is now, for the seventh straight game, has allowed 20 points or less, you're going to be in every single football game in the second half, and then weird things happen like this, where ESPN's win probability for this game after Nebraska's final first down, I think with about 5 minutes left, had him at 94%. Well, what happens after that? Justin Wally strips them. Minnesota gets a touchdown. Tyler Newbin interception, field goal, and you win it. Well, when your defense continues to make plays, because that had been the last piece that we had been talking about in 2022, fellas, was where are the turnovers? They're very good on third down. They're very good in total defense. They're very good in terms of scoring defense. But we want to see more turnovers. Well, you could argue Wally almost should have had another turnover when he jumped the route near the end zone of the student section there, had one bounce near his hands, if not off his chest. But if they can just get consistent contributions like that, and Minnesota can potentially have some Iowa turnover luck, boy, wouldn't that be a fun season to cover.
Ryan, it's still kind of summer. It isn't quite fall yet. That means many people are still mowing their lawns. And we know that many people listen to this podcast, listen while they're mowing the lawn. And most importantly, they're probably using earbuds, and they should be using Comply foam earbuds, should they not?
I swear to you, I thought to put in earbuds meant my ears were going to hurt in an hour later, and they were kind of consistently fall out. Well, I use Comply foam earbuds, and guess what? They're comfortable in my ear, and my ears don't hurt when they take them out. Now, I got Beats Pros, Luke's got the Apple ones, and here's what I would say. If you want to support a local company, they're out of Oakdale, Minnesota. If you want to actually go to the gym and work out, or if you're someone who has earbuds in all day at work, whatever it may be, and you're thinking to yourself, yeah, you know, these earbuds, the tips hurt my ear. They don't stay in. I want to make sure that I'm getting a lot for my investment. Well, Luke, use the promo code at checkout, GG23, for 20% off your first order at complyfoam.com. They've got so many different varieties of earbuds that you can obviously use. So make sure to go to complyfoam.com. Use the promo code GG23 at checkout for 20% off your first order. Your ears won't hurt again, Luke.
To save those ears, use the promo code GG23 at complyfoam.com. Okay, let's talk about the Gopher offense on the day. They were able to amass 13 points, some in part thanks to their defense, who was able to give them extra opportunities, etc. The offense kind of started in a way, they started all right, right? At one point, I think they were 6 of 9 on third downs. You know, they weren't getting explosive plays, but they were at least being efficient, just couldn't translate that into points early, only amassing 3 in the first half. On the day, they totaled 251 yards of total offense, 196 through the air. And if you're listening to this, they passed the ball 44 times, only completing 24. But you know, when we said that they're gonna have to rally around and their identity is gonna have to be Ethan Kaliak-Manis, I mean, they committed to the bit. But conversely, I mean, they only attempted rushing the ball 25 times for 55 total yards. That's a 2.2 yard average, and frankly, it was probably worse than that, because if it hadn't been for that 11 yard run to set up the field goal, that'd have been, you know, 44 yards. So in the end, the offense, I think you can see where the potential lies. The struggle really seemed to be, you know, their inability to run the ball. So maybe Derek, just to start, get us an idea of what we're trying to do schematically against a 3-3-5, basically the same defense they saw in the bowl game against Syracuse. But what were the Gophers trying to do?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think first and foremost, Nebraska, their scheme coming in, or their, you know, what they wanted to do on defense was a couple things. First is they wanted to keep either a soft zone or cushion man coverage with the safeties back to basically take away deep shots. I think Minnesota threw it deep twice, didn't complete on either of them. So they wanted to stay soft and pass coverage in order to keep everything in front of them, as the cliche goes. Secondly, they tried to stay very disruptive, which is the hallmark of the 3-3-5, very disruptive with their front seven, whoever that was in the box. And I think they were able to accomplish that for the most part. I just wanted to say, before I talk more on schematics, I was impressed by Nebraska's, very impressed by Nebraska's defense. I don't know, Ryan, maybe you can comment on what the thought was coming into the season, whether they return. I don't follow that like you do, but again, having just watched the game as you know, someone who doesn't follow personnel very closely, I was impressed. I also was very impressed by the coaching on Nebraska's defensive side of the ball, which is definitely a change from the previous regime. So here's what I think created problems for the Gophers up front. 3-3-5 defense. The reason that it's difficult is because it's difficult to identify your box counts based on who lines up. So at both the quarterback and the offensive lineman, quarterback determines the reads based on who's basically in the box set up to defend the run. And then the offensive linemen determine their blocking schemes based on who's in the box. With the 3-3-5, it's basically a disguise. They may have 7 defenders in the box or even 8, but they don't line 7 or 8 up at the snap or pre-snap. So that safety or strong safety or additional box defender often comes in post-snap. And so it's difficult to account for that guy. And that's what creates problems. So you end up with, you know, basically a faster, sometimes lighter defense that's able to run guys into the box post-snap that you don't account for. And then what happens is you rely on your running back to break that tackle. And that, for the most part, didn't happen. And we can talk about that and get to the running game. But that's what Nebraska wanted to do. And what Minnesota did was, that's why it turned into the underneath passing show. They weren't having success in the run game. We can talk about why. But passing-wise, being that Nebraska was taking away most of the deep shots, they ended up throwing it underneath. So it became a lot of dink and dunk, which for the most part, you know, the Gophers were, you know, had some success with, but credit to Nebraska. They did not let the Gophers develop enough consistency to be able to go all the way up and down the field with that.
The thing that was stressed to me this week was Tony White was the Syracuse defensive coordinator. Minnesota obviously played against Syracuse in their bowl game. So the point that was made to me is, when I asked what's the big difference between what you expect to see against Nebraska versus what you saw at Syracuse. Well, at Syracuse in the ACC, their defensive linemen were 260, 270 pounds. And they were twitched up, but they're undersized. Well, at Nebraska, I will continue to scream into the ether and say they have the bodies. And when the bodies go from 260 to 270 to 300 to 310 pounds, that's how issues can be created, especially if they're twitched up like some of those guys on the Nebraska defensive line were. And that's where I'll continue to echo what Derek said. That Nebraska defense is going to be a problem. Now, I think they need a couple of years to continue to get more athletes at all three levels. But even in their first game within that system, you saw how much issues that caused Minnesota. Now we'll see as more and more teams continue to get more and more tape on that 3-3-5, how they want to attack it. But it was clear that Minnesota was really struggling, especially with such a brand new unit up front, Derek, where Quinn Carroll sticks a tackle, which I don't know. I think the thing I feel about that is I feel sad that I wasted so much time, energy, effort, and words about Quinn Carroll's going to be a really good guard. And I still think he would be. I still don't think he would be an all Big Ten caliber guard. I think that's his best position. He works at guard all spring. And in the fall camp, I'd say a bulk of his snaps when the media was there was still a guard. And then here we are, game one. They slide in Martez Lewis to right guard. You get your first real look at Nathan Bowe at center outside of the bowl game. And then you get to your first real look at fifth years from St. Croix Falls, Tyler Cooper there. To me, Derek, and you're the elite offensive line mind, it just looked like last night a unit that hadn't played together a lot, a unit that hadn't seen a lot of great looks potentially because they didn't know what they were getting with a 3-3-5. But I got two questions for you. Number one, what were your just general impressions of what you saw from the offensive line last night? And the other thing that was stressed to me by some people around the football complex was the other thing that makes the 3-3-5 so difficult to defend, especially up front, is angles. That guys are constantly being thrown at you at different angles that you may not normally see in a 3-4 or 4-3 defense. So what were your two impressions there?
Well, I think schematically, one of the approaches that historically or conventionally teams take against a 3-4 or 3-3-5 is to load up the box and run straight at it. And I have no doubt that if it was not 2023, that probably would have been PJ Fleck's approach, is to run more heavy personnel and run zone and power directly at that front, because basically force a game of attrition. But they stayed away from that, and I give them credit because that's just not going to be their identity this year. They ran more 3 and 4 wide receiver personnel, even if you're counting Brevin Spanford in many cases playing a wide receiver role. They stayed a lot lighter in personnel, which is a challenge against a 3-3-5. So schematically, I would say they didn't go back into turtle mode and decide to just run downhill at it. Now, had they gotten a lead in the second half, would they have done that? And to your point about Quinn Carroll, I'd be interested to know if they get into a game that becomes a game script where they're running more, if they don't move him inside and move somebody else to right tackle. I think the reason that he's at right tackle is because they do want to throw more, and they're probably concerned about edge pass protection. Would be my guess. I mean, you maybe know more. Just
that
given
would be
the personnel.
My guess as to why Quinn Carroll's there is they believe he's the best option in pass protection there.
Yep.
Which I don't know what that necessarily says about Martez Lewis's abilities there, or even JJ Gbeys, mm-hmm. which again, I don't have an opinion one way or another about those two, more or less, because I haven't mm-hmm. seen enough of them consistently. But that's what I would glean from Quinn Carroll sticking at right tackle is okay. It's not about run game. It's about, they think he's the best option in terms of trying to combat these Big Ten defensive ends.
Okay. So as far as the execution from the offensive line, I would characterize it as mentally sharp and pretty good in pass, really pretty decent in pass protection. The run game is where they struggled, I think, to match the athleticism of Nebraska's front seven. I think you have some very big, very upperclassmen on the offensive line. But athletically, I think in at least 3 out of the 5 positions, they struggled to keep up with Nebraska athletically. So just finishing blocks, staying on, it just wasn't clean. I think you bring up a good point with angles, that makes it extra difficult. And I think Nebraska's front seven's a little better than people think it is, and that probably will bear out during the season. But they need to do better in the front seven in the straight-ahead run game at just finishing blocks and being able to execute on that. Again, you know, in looking back at the tape, I didn't see a lot of missed assignments, one here or there, certainly a couple in pass protection, just blown assignments. But it just, again, guys are making the right decisions, which you'd expect out of an upperclassman, and being able to execute is what they got to work on in the run game. And, you know, you didn't ask about running back yet, Luke, but I'd just throw in, I think in the past, we've been a little bit spoiled in that,
yes,
you know, there are times when these teams do run either a plus one box or they line up in an even box and they run a safety or a corner or a nickel defender into the box post snap. Well, Mo Ibrahim's been able to take care of that defender, and we didn't see that on Thursday night. So they didn't get any, I don't think they got a lot of help out of the running back, but the offensive line, and in the past, I'll end it with a positive note. Pass protection, we've sort of lamented the troubles with twists and stunts. That was very good. You know, passing off twists and stunts and picking up blitzes, it wasn't perfect. There were a couple misses, but again, mentally, I think they were very sharp and actually pretty good in that area.
So I didn't get a chance to rewatch this. I know, Ryan, you said that Bryce Williams struggled in pass protection in some of our techs, but I thought he did pretty well.
He was great. I thought he was, there were certainly instances when I rewatched the game where it was, I agreed with Pro Football Focus's grades for both him and Sean Tyler in pass protection, which were very poor. There were some good reps, certainly, but there were also a couple of reps where I don't know if he wasn't on the same page or the running back just in general wasn't on the same page of what, say, gap that he was going to be responsible for on this play action, whether it was going to be, say, the B gap between, say, the left guard and in the left tackle, because there would be a tackle that would let a guy clean through, and then we would watch him run straight past the running back. And I'm thinking to myself, there's just clearly there were some communication issues at times up front.
Sure, yeah. And I haven't gotten a chance to rewatch it, but there are a couple times he popped for me where he, you know, one, we got to give him credit for coming off the injury that he did and coming back. And he was able to make a meaningful block in those situations. So, but I can see it's hard when you're watching it live to assess that. But I thought at times he did flash.
Well, you can just one tip to throw in here. There were a couple. I think this is what you're referring to, Ryan. There were a couple times when a lineman came, especially towards the end of the game, where a rush defender came through with kind of a clean look. I know one of them for sure was a missed assignment on the left guard, but if you're watching the game and you see a defensive tackle come through, that's a missed assignment. That's not, running backs are never picking up a tackle. And so there were a couple where they either had a twisting defender or a linebacker that the interior offensive lineman picked up and they let the defensive lineman go, and that's a miss. So they did probably make the running backs look bad in that case. But I would also say, I guess I would agree with Ryan in this regard, that it needs to be cleaner pass blocking from the running backs. Even again, not trying to bail out, you know, on a play where somebody else missed an assignment, but just straight up being able to, and again, this is a tough task against the 3-3-5. That's the point of a 3-3-5. They don't want you to know where the rushes are coming from. They don't want you to know where the twist stunts and blitzes. So a tough first challenge, but I think it does need to get better pass blocking from running back for sure.
The other thing I would note is the number one question I might have gotten outside of some of the nuances we'll get into with what a Greg Harbaugh offense looks like is, Ryan, where was Zach Evans? Ryan, where was Darius Taylor? Here's my theory. Now, it wasn't asked in the post-game press conference. We don't get Fleck again until Monday. So if you're mad at me, a media member, for not asking him about random running backs after the press conference and we get 10 total minutes with him, you can direct that into the DMs and scream into the ether there. But here's my theory in terms of why Sean Tyler and Bryce Williams were the two to get the reps primarily before we saw Darius Taylor get three snaps in the second half. It's game one against an opponent that Fleck doesn't know what to expect from. So what is he going to lean on? He's going to lean on what he knows. It's the same thing a lot of us would do probably with anything in life. You're going to go with what you know probably before you go with what the unknown is. So he knows what he's going to get from Bryce Williams and Sean Tyler, more or less. He's seen the tape. He's worked with Bryce for years. He's seen what Sean Tyler has been able to do at Western Michigan. That's what he was going to go with. Now, Do I expect to see more Zach Evans and Darius Taylor next week? Boy, I'd hope so, because to Derek's earlier point where Mo Ibrahim was able to really make so many men miss, and he was one of the best running backs in the country in terms of forcing missed tackles, Bryce Williams didn't force a single missed tackle on his carries last night, and then Sean Tyler accounted for 3 missed tackles. I mean, if we're talking about a running back crew that got 16, 17 carries, I'm going to need to see more than 3 missed tackles on 16, 17 carries. It just has to be better. I mean, it gives me flashbacks to the Purdue game last year where without Mo, I don't believe Minnesota forced a single missed tackle. So it just has to be – why was the running game so bad? Derek can continue to walk you through the X's and O's, but I think just to say it's simply – the offensive line wasn't consistent enough, but the running backs didn't exactly do much with what they were awarded, I would say. Now, I want to see Sean Tyler used maybe more out to the edges, where I think that's where he's going to be. He's a speed back. He's not a between the runners guy. But just the way that I think that Nebraska attacked them on Thursday night didn't lend to his strengths. But it's certainly going to be, if that's the way that teams are going to play Minnesota, and obviously they have to run the ball much more efficiently, much more effectively, if they're going to continue to win games. I just think that I hear you people. I want to see Darius Taylor. I want to see Zach Evans, because I just want to see the best players play. But why did PJ do it, what he did with the running back rotation last night? I think he wanted to go with what he knew. And to me, that's a very... I mean, I get it.
Yeah, that's fair. I think, you know, in the running game, are there faults on Minnesota's side? Can they improve? Yeah. It seemed, you know, they're trying to be more vertical than, you know, try to stretch them out horizontally. You know, they did that some in the pass game, but not so much in the running game. And then you also just have to give Nebraska credit. Like, Nebraska did a good job. Nebraska didn't necessarily break down on tackles. They didn't have a lot of missed tackles, you know, your earlier point, Ryan, where, you know, some of those explosive gains in the run game for Nebraska were the result of missed tackles. So you got to give them some credit.
And again, I think all three of us agree we are much more bullish on the Nebraska defense, and we'll see if that becomes true over the next 11 games. But I also hesitate to make statements like that because, folks, I know it's the only game we've seen, so we want to make these these giant grandioso assumptions about what we know. What we know is we just watched 7 to 8% of what the Gophers are going to be this season, because we watched 1 of 13 games. And I think we all would agree that's not a definitive data point. Now,
right.
are all three of us a little worried about the run game from what we saw last night? I would be. I mean, certainly it didn't look like it was very conducive. Am I worried about some things in the passing game? Certainly. But I just don't want to make these – I know everybody wants to jump to conclusions that we know everything right now. We don't know everything.
We don't. No.
We won't know everything until probably – I don't even know, probably the bye week. Even after the bye week, we're still going to see this offense continue to evolve. But the thing I want to ask Derek about is, it finally came out after the game, Greg Harbaugh is the man calling the plays. What did you think of the first indoctrination of a Greg Harbaugh offense, shifts, motions, under center? Did you know what to do with yourself?
Yeah, quite a few. Certainly pre-snap. Maybe more... more drama in this game than the past couple seasons combined. I mean,
So if you had to explain to the casual football fan, mm-hmm. Derek, why is it important that in your mind that you think Greg Harbaugh is trying to use so much pre-snap motion for someone like Ethan Calliope-Manis?
Well, yeah. So two things. I think the answer you're looking for is that helps the quarterback identify what the coverage is going to be in a passing situation. And it helps hopefully the defense tip their hand in a running situation of who the box defenders are going to be. I would also say you're going to see that against teams who use their defense, or they change their defense dramatically based on formation. And in a 3-3-5, that's generally what you do. So again, we talked about how pre-snap you have 6 box defenders. You generally pre or post snap run 1 or 2 in on a running situation, but you try to disguise who that's going to be. But who you do, who you run in and from what position is determined by the offense's formation. So what they're doing is they're trying to line up, get Nebraska into their defensive calls, and then shift so that they have to recall and reread the offense and make a second call. So it's both trying to help Ethan with his reads, but then also trying to confuse the defense if they're running a defense that is predicated on how the offense lines up and then changes their call. So I think twofold, and I think they did a good job with that for the most part, you know, being able to handle that. I don't think they had illegal formation called or an illegal shift a whole night, so at least they were able to execute on that. But I just play calling in general, I would say a couple things. I think that as a first game, they kept it a little bit more vanilla. As interestingly, in the second half, I thought both offenses in the first half were not able to organically generate explosive plays. So if in a situation like that, you generally look for teams to try and manufacture some explosive plays. And true to that, Nebraska came out, and that's where they ran the double pass or the quarterback throwback, because that's good coaching. You know, you're not able to create something organically. You need an explosive play. You're going to call a couple of shots. So they were able to do that. Minnesota, I think, kept it a little bit more vanilla. I think, you know, the only thing I would criticize is being a little bit more creative with. I know they tried the reverse, which kind of backfired on them. That may have contributed to them going away from something, you know, a little bit more tricky in the second half, but probably need a little bit more there. And then I would just say, too, a couple things we saw that we hadn't in the past. With Sean Tyler specifically, they ran more counter, which they haven't showed. You know, usually it's been inside zone. It's been a little bit of power mixed in, but they've ran more counter. And I think that lends itself to Sean's running style, which is completely different, just about opposite of Mo Ibrahim. We could talk about that if we want. But those were some of the things. So I think, Ryan, you touched on it. Shifts and motions, couple more wrinkles in the running game, but probably kept it a little bit more vanilla overall.
Before we kick it back to Luke, I do want to have you expand on that. It's something you and I talked about in the wee hours in the morning in terms of when we both were discussing the counter in terms of Minnesota using that in their playbook now. How would you compare and contrast Mo Ibrahim and Sean Tyler as runners? Because physically, they look the same. Mm-hmm. I think we both, all three of us agree, they're very, very different players. But if you had to compare and contrast the running styles for people, how would you describe it, Derek?
Yep. So, for, you know, we had the good fortune of watching Mo achieve the success he did. And Mo's game was based, number one, on vision. I will continue to say he had the best vision of any running back I've ever seen in a Gopher uniform. And then also, you know, of course, so being patient, having good vision, being able to break tackles. So a more calculated, slower to approach running. Sean is just about the complete opposite. Sean is a one read, one cut and go fast runner. So he hits the hole a lot faster. He doesn't take his line. This isn't a knock. It's just his game. He doesn't take the patience and doesn't sit back and take the time to read plays. He's making one read and he's going, because that's his game. So I would guess that the coaching staff brought in counter as something for him, because it's a quicker hitting where the offensive lineman kicks out the edge defender, and then the H-back folds around to pick up the linebacker, and it's a quicker hitting play. So you usually take a false step or a jab step, and then you're right upfield, which lends itself, you know, to Sean. But where it hurt him, you know, again, just say one more time, in the game on Thursday, is many times they did have an extra box defender post snap, and if he was sure tackling and in his run fit, Sean wasn't able to break that tackle most of the time, where Mo would do that in his sleep. But it's an unfair for us to compare a guy, you know, we're watching a Mount Rushmore running back for the Gophers, and, you know, we've been spoiled. And so, you know, with more reps, I think Sean will adjust to, you know, Big Ten level speed and strength, and he'll continue to hone his game. But I think, just one more thing to touch on what you said, Ryan, about Sean. I think he's going to be best in space. So in a game where you're not playing a 3-4 or a 3-3-5 defense, to get him out on the edge, run a little bit more outside zone, maybe get him out on some flare patterns, maybe a screen pass, I think that's where he's going to be more dangerous.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the passing game. We've focused primarily on, you know, pass protection. We've also focused on the running game. Ethan Calliak-Manis started for the Gophers. He was 24-44, 196 yards, 8.2 yard average. He had a touchdown and an interception on the day. You know, you look at the completion percentage and you say to yourself, you know, it could have been better. There were definitely some drops, right? There are also some balls that Ethan absolutely put on the money. Like you're just like, wow, what an absolute dime of a throw. And then there are a couple where you're like, whoa, that was absolutely too much heat on that ball to Sean Tyler, right? I think it was an up and down game. I think the big thing was that, you know, they talked about the poise, and, you know, even though he had adversity and threw the pick, he's able to come back and lead them on the game tying drive when they were given that opportunity. So I just want to assess your guys's feel for the pass game in general. And Ryan, probably start with you. You know, what were your thoughts?
What I liked was some Ethan throws off schedule. And what I mean by that is it's certainly apparent to me that if you want to try and compare and contrast Ethan Calliak-Manis to Tanner Morgan, one of the things you're going to notice that Ethan really excels at is having to be creative. You know, we've talked a lot about last year Tanner Morgan excels in the black and white, where maybe Ethan Calliak-Manis is going to excel more in the gray area, that when the first play breaks down and it becomes scramble drill, he's got that, I guess, necessarily gunslinger mentality, even the sidearm throw. I mean, I think what fully encompasses what I've been trying to tell people for the last few months about the ups and downs that I expect from Ethan this year was that third quarter drive where Ethan gets flushed out of the pocket, a little has to go into his right and just sidearm slings it to Corey Crooms 20 yards down the field on an absolute dot. Heck of a throw, one that not a lot of Gopher quarterbacks can make. And then on the very next play, he tries to push it out to Daniel Jackson, and Minneapolis North native Omar Brown comes up with an interception. Those are the highs, those are the lows, and you're trying to find some consistent area in the middle. I don't like 4 yards per attempt. That's egregious, but you know, you've heard Derek talk about some of the reasons why Minnesota maybe wasn't taking those deep shots, not necessarily conducive to what the offense was giving them. But I almost want to see if this is a floor type of game for Ethan, because if it is, I think the floor for an Ethan game is higher than it was necessarily at times for a Tanner Morgan game. There were going to be ceiling games with him. I mean, you saw him scramble for a couple of first downs on third and long, which helped. You saw him. I mean, Minnesota on the day was 8 of 17 on third down. Do you want to guess what the average down and distance on 17 different third downs
was? It had to be like 8.5 or 9 yards.
It was 7.8.
Yeah.
Was the average down and distance on 17 different, and Minnesota still converted almost 50% of them. Just, they were just so incredibly inefficient on early downs because they couldn't run that I think you truly saw in the fourth quarter. I wouldn't be shocked if Greg Harbaugh goes into the headset and says, we just can't run. I'm going to have to do dink and dunk just to mimic a running game to get us 4 or 5 yards to keep us on schedule. And I think that's what you saw at times on those final couple of drives from Minnesota. But it's also going to come down to Luke's point. My man's got to learn how to throw a Johan Santana level changeup.
Yeah.
Because if we're trying to hit the running backs out in the flat or a swing pattern or just anyone within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage, I think he was a little amped last night because we're seeing Johan Duran's fastball instead of Santana's changeup. And he's got to learn how to, again, different levels of throws, different types of throws. What does this type of throw need? Now, I know that if there's any Nebraska fans listening to this, they're going to be shaking their fist at the angry Big Ten referee god saying Ariante Ursary got away with a false start on that final play where Daniel Jackson goes Air Jordan on the bit, which very much may be true. To me, I don't know if it's definitive enough. I also think that Bryce Benhart got away with murder on Ja Joyner quite a few times once again. Without a penalty at times. Plus, I remember watching Daniel Jackson on a double move in the middle of the field on the rewatch get absolutely bear hugged.
Yes.
Everything ends up throwing it away, and Daniel Jackson's looking around after the play like, what in the world do I have to do to draw a flag? I ain't going to look at the refs for this game, but to me, Luke, before we kick it to Derek, I'll reiterate, it was just a very inefficient passing game. I mean, you saw Daniel Jackson obviously make some stellar plays. You saw him with a couple drops. You saw Corey Crooms really make some plays at times. You saw maybe some more plays to be made. I think Minnesota is also still trying to figure out how they want to use Brevin Spanford this year. You saw him flexed out quite a bit. I think Minnesota is going to probably continue to lean into that as they try and figure out how to get him the best matchup. But to me, Derek, it just looked like this is an offense, especially a passing offense, that's still trying to figure out what they're really good at, especially with a first-time play caller.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you covered a lot of the analysis of Ethan that I would agree with. I would add the thing that I don't think was talked about too much that stuck out to me on the positive side with Ethan was great pocket presence. That wasn't Tanner's strong suit. Something that he always, it was a challenge for him. And that's something that combined with his arm strength, what I think you're going to see is that becomes an asset in getting yourself out of bad plays. That's kind of the cliche is that your good players on offense get you out of bad plays or they make something out of nothing. And we saw that from Mo Ibrahim a number of times where maybe the defense had numbers or they had some unblocked defenders and he was able to make a miss and turn a 2-yard gain into a 15-yard gain. Well, how that manifests as a quarterback is you could do everything right on defense. You could have the right pass coverage called. You'd have guys in the right spots. But if you have a quarterback that's able to create some time with his feet and evade a rush and just throw into a tight window and get a conversion, I think we saw that a number of times, particularly on third down, that's really frustrating for defenses. And it's really helpful on offense because it gets you out of a bad play and keeps the chains moving. So that's something that just athletically and physically, I think he's going to be able to bring that. But I also think, Ryan, you mentioned, I think his number one challenge coming out of the game is touch passes, particularly mm-hmm. in the red zone. You know, being able to, he looks most comfortable when he's throwing the ball hard, when he's throwing fastballs, mm-hmm. when he has to get in and throw a fade or a corner, something like that. He just looks uncomfortable with that. And I think I'm not a quarterback coach by any means, but I think they need to find a way for him to continue to put velocity on those passes, but get the ball where it needs to be. If you look in the NFL, for example, they stay away from a lot of touch passes because the defenses are too fast. They can get underneath those and get a deflection or an interception. So most of what you see in the NFL is all fastballs. And I think they need to probably move that direction with Ethan unless he's able to develop a comfort with some of those. But yeah, taking a little bit off at times. And again, maybe like the some of the dump downs to the running backs, again, he's throwing that 100 miles an hour where he can back off and throw it at 90. I think that would be just fine. So definitely some potential and upside, but I think you're right in that they weren't able to develop consistency just because the backside of the field was blocked off. They had to find things underneath. But Luke, I don't know if you want to transition to wide receiver. I would just say breath of fresh air at the slot receiver yes. position. That was, you know, we talked last year and really probably went on and on about how frustrating the Gophers it was to watch the slot receiver position and basically ended up using that as a decoy position to run off safeties. Corey Crooms is a huge breath of fresh air at the slot to be able to throw underneath some of those coverages and find the pockets in the zone. I mean, that was his numbers speak for themselves, but that was really nice to see.
Yeah. As you look at wide receiver in general, Daniel Jackson with 9 receptions for 68 yards. He was by far target number one. Ryan, you've been standing on the chair yelling he's wide receiver one. Elijah Spencer with a catch. Corey Crooms was 7 for 63. And, you know, Brevin Spanford was flexed out a lot, basically playing wide receiver. We also saw Lemeke Brockington get some run. He had a target. I'm trying to think who other receivers that got some run, Ryan. Ottman Bell was in for the first play, but that was like a token. Like, he didn't play the rest of the game.
Yeah, let me take the Ottman Bell question now. I don't know how much more clear I could have really made it without explicitly saying it like I'm going to say right now. But we're talking about a guy that is not even a year removed yet from complete knee. I mean, his knee was eviscerated. ACL, MCL, meniscus, and it's not even a year away. I think people are just used to seeing – these insane NFL athletes come back so quickly and just be explosive. I mean, those we're talking about the 1% of the 1% of the 1% of type of athletes. Chris Ottman-Bell is a great athlete. It's why he is one of the best receivers in terms statistically in Gopher football history. But to be able to come back from something like that and expecting him to be able to play a full complement of snaps in game one, not even a year removed, was never within the realm of possibilities for me. I don't know how else I could have made it clear during fall camp as well, when if you read my practice reports, you know, I was saying, I don't think Chris is 100% yet. I don't think Chris is 100% yet. I hope he's at 100% by potentially the Michigan game, if not the bye week. I just don't think this is going to be a flip or a switch you flip on instantaneously and he's playing 40 snaps against Eastern Michigan next Saturday. I don't think that's the way this is going to go. I think it's going to be a slow transition of him continuing to get more comfortable on his knee, figuring out what his knee will give him in terms of twitch, in terms of explosion, and then Minnesota will continue to reincorporate him. But the thing that Derek notes with, obviously, Corey Crooms, I mean, if you can have Daniel Jackson have a couple of those concentration or maybe fastball drops disappear from there, if you can have Daniel Jackson out wide, Corey Crooms in the slot, and then figure out how to best utilize Brevin Span forward, plus get contributions at some point from guys like Elijah Spencer, Lemeke Brockington, and eventually Chris Ottman-Bell, you can see what this offense wants to be. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to be a lot of things in life, but what I'm actually going to be is talking to you on a podcast. So what this offense eventually wants to be is great, but what they can be is the thing I want to see. And that's where, to Derek's initial point, it was refreshing to watch Gopher receivers consistently create separation at times, because I don't know how many years in a row we've been lamenting about that. Now, I'm not telling you that Nebraska's corners are the greatest thing since sliced bread, but they're certainly competent Big Ten corners. This isn't like Minnesota struggling to get off press man against Western Illinois. So that's going to be the thing I want to see going forward to Eastern Michigan next week with this offense. We've spent so much time. We want to see a more efficient running game. I want to see it. You want to see it, both with the offensive line, the running backs breaking tackles, well, in the passing game. I want to see how Greg Harbaugh and Matt Simon kind of were able to see them design a game plan, maybe more so next week. Now, Eastern Michigan is taking on Howard, which probably isn't going to be the greatest representation, but you're at least going to see them with a game tape and an actual viable plan to see how do they attack with a defense that they know that they're going to get. And that's where I think eventually here very soon it's going to become more explosive, because that was one of the least explosive performances I think I've seen from a Gopher offense. They had two plays over 20 yards and they were both at 20 yards.
I think you can say that that's the least explosive the Gopher offense has been with 44 pass attempts. Right.
Oh, I mean, certainly, again, 44 pass attempts and having four under a 5 yards per attempt is terrible.
Yeah, that's tough.
And that speaks to how unexplosive they were. I think the point I'm trying to say here, Luke, is I don't anticipate that being the case moving forward, because they have the skill position players to be explosive.
Yeah.
They just have to figure out how to get them into those explosive spots and to be able to hit those spots, if that makes sense.
In 2023, Gopher Gridiron Radio is brought to you by the Burns Insurance Agency from Oakdale, Minnesota. Ryan, if you're looking to save money, or maybe you're just looking to deal with a better insurance provider, the Burns Insurance is the solution, isn't it not?
It certainly is. If you want to be working with a Gopher fan that is also an independent insurance agent that puts your needs first, you should check out Burns Insurance. They just recently saved somebody $1,500. For just switching their home and auto to the independent insurance agency that is Burns Insurance. Now, they're located in Oakdale, Minnesota. He is a giant Gopher fan, so if you think you're paying too much for your home, auto, boat, whatever it may be, check them out at insurancebyburns.com or shoot them an email for a free quote today at bill@insurancebyburns.com.
Once again, we're back to a standalone segment Ryan Burns' opinion on Gopher special teams. It's a tried and true bit.
That's the thing. I hate that this is still there. I'm going to say this again because I'm sure this will be one of our most listened to episodes. Everybody's excited about the Nebraska wins, first game of the season.
Yeah.
There's nothing I would enjoy more than to talk about the complete game performance from a Rob Wenger unit. And I just, the first kick was great when Mark Crawford's right foot pinned him at the 1 yard line, 52 yards down the field. The left footed Serbian of Dragan Kesic splits the uprights from 47 to win the game. Those two plays were outstanding. And then, my God, what happened in the middle? Because it's just, so I don't understand why in year seven now that there's still these just colossal mistakes. I mean, you see Minnesota lose contain on a kickoff that allows Nebraska with plus field position. I mean, the guy just ran, he veered right. I mean, this wasn't like a couple of great moves to make men mess. The man just veered right, and Tyler Stolsky and Jack Henderson are just nowhere to be found with contain there. Took poor angles. We see, you know, the punter call in terms of roughing the punter. I don't know about that. Was it a flag? Certainly was, because Joey Gerlach, the pride of Woodbury, shout out to the East Metro here, blew up the protector there. He wasn't pushed. I have watched that play about 10 times because I had so many people try to tell me last night, oh, by the way, he was pushed into him. It was a horrible call.
No,
he trucked him. He trucked a much larger man than him. And then he just went into the punter. What? I don't think it was roughing the punter. It was certainly running into the punter. But the big difference there being roughing the punter is an automatic first down on 4th and 22, which is absolutely inexcusable. Running into the punter is a 5-yard penalty, repeat the down. So that can't happen. And then in the return game.
The return game is fine. We need to sit on that for a minute because, like, in the past, that it was a very conservative approach, take the fair catch, right? If they had done that, they would have been in a better spot had they not returned it. I know Q Redding has had some big returns, but I don't know if it was scheme or what, but they were just missing
blocks. I don't know what was going on. The kick return unit in terms of blocking for him, I don't fault Q Redding here.
No.
He just didn't have a lot to go with, but the issue with that is, three returns later, Minnesota lost 18 yards of field position for an offense that was already struggling.
Yeah.
I don't understand how you can have these highs of highs where I'll say again, God bless Mark Crawford in that first punt, 52 yards down to the one. You cannot ask for anything better. The final kick off Dragan Kesic's leg, kid's got ice in his veins. You love to see it. 47 yards gives him the victory. Outstanding. The kid is one of my favorite people on the entire team. Great personality. And you're happy for him. But why is it that it's just never consistent? How in year seven can it just not be consistent when you've had the same person working with these units and you have so many guys returning? I mean, Q Redding's returning. Mark Crawford's returning.
Brady Weeks
is returning.
Yeah.
Let's get to this. Again, you look at the punt average for Mark Crawford, 45 per. That looks really good. Okay, the 52 one-yard scart, it really skews it, I should say, because the other was a 37-yard net, it was a 38-yard net, and like a 40-yard net. Do you see why I get so frustrated? Because you see the glimpses. You see the flashes. I would love nothing more than to wear the banner of look at Gopher special teams. LeVar Woods who? But it's just, again, I'm going to get ripped. I always get ripped when I do this. Because Ryan, Dragan Kesic won the game. Take that, you bitter old man. Okay, I just want more from special teams. Because if this is the way Minnesota's always going to play, and guess what? Here we are again in year seven of the Fleck era. You know what you're going to get offensively, defensively. Now imagine if you knew what you were going to get on any given special teams play on a given week.
All right. I do have one question.
That's what I got.
I got one situational question for you, Derek. So you've got 3 minutes and 39 seconds left in what quarter is this? This must be the second quarter. Yes, the second quarter. And you've got, 339. You've got 4th and 9 from Nebraska's 36. You attempt a 54-yard field goal with Dragan Kesage. Did you like taking that 54-yard field goal? I know that Mark Crawford didn't handle it particularly well. I know he had enough leg. He just pushed it left, etc. Having kicked myself, I know how discombobulating it can be when it isn't clean. But just the call, what are your thoughts, Derek, on actually taking that field goal?
Yeah, Dragan's strength is the length. So he has the leg to hit those from about 54. That's probably right at his maximum. So taking some points there in a low scoring game, I can understand that. I guess I won't beat around the bush. I didn't have a huge problem with it. Again, now what Ryan's going to say is the Gophers certainly have not been good at anything over 50 yards in a field goal. So their history isn't with them there, but I didn't hate that. You know, just an overriding comment though, I wanted to make on special teams is this is probably the most negative thing I take out of the game. And that's, if you believe that Minnesota and Nebraska talent wise are in the same arena, you know, we could squabble about, you know, certain position groups or whatever. But if you believe they're in the same realm talent wise, there's no way, there's no reason that Matt Rhule in year one takes one of the worst special teams in the country and thoroughly outplays Minnesota in year PJ Fleck year 7 special teams. That's very disappointing. And I agree with Ryan that yes, it wasn't all bad. There's a couple very bright spots, but overall, Nebraska special teams were better than Minnesota special teams by, I think, a pretty wide margin. So that's a credit, I guess, to Nebraska, but it's also, to me, that's unacceptable in year 7 versus year 1, especially given how bad Nebraska was on special teams the last few years.
To your point about the 50-yard field goals, I will say two things, and both statements can be true. I want Dragan Kesage, of all the recent Gopher kickers, to be the one taking the 50-yard attempts. I have seen him make them consistently in practice. It just didn't happen to go through the uprights on Thursday night. The issue is, if my University of Minnesota education is correct, Minnesota is now 2 of their last 9 on 50 or longer field goal attempts. That is an issue. And I don't know how it's rectified other than you just keep giving Dragan chances. But the downside is, obviously, if you don't hit him, you give the opponent great field position at the opposing, you know, at their own 35 or whatnot against a Joe Rossi defense where it's historically been proven. If you just pit him within the 10, they're probably not going to move the ball very much, if at all, and then you just get the ball back anyway. So it's just trying to find a middle ground.
You know,
I'm going to do my best to change my best and not get so worked up, but I'm just glad that, you know, Derek makes the point that I think I've been trying to make is Nebraska has been awful on special teams. And in game one, year one of a brand new head coach, I agree with Derek that they about thoroughly outplayed Minnesota on special teams in year 7. And why do we act like we're all surprised here?
Well, I would just close with this, Luke. The return game specifically, kick return, punt return. As a coach, you come in with a scheme, you work the scheme, you look at areas to improve, you look where you're not doing well, you work at it. I think they're at a point, I'm not saying this for hyperbole, I think you throw everything out, start over on kick return and punt return. Bring in a new concept, bring in a new approach, whatever, because it can't get any worse. I mean, they just literally can't. So there are times that coaches will do that. You're not going to do that offensively or defensively. You're not going to, you know, but in certain situations, down and distance, blitz packages, whatever, where you work at it, and it's just not happening. So get rid of the scheme, throw it out the window, bring in something completely new, because why not?
Yeah, I don't disagree with you guys. I think that's entirely too much time on special teams, frankly. Got to give Dragan credit. You know, coming
makes
back
the 34, yeah. Great, and then he comes back off a miss, gets iced. Which, by the way, the other part that if you weren't at the stadium last night was one of the most bizarre endings that no one is talking about.
after Matt Rhule, or was it, it was right around the Matt Rhule icing the kicker timeout, a Nebraska fan ran onto the field and like ran around for like 25 seconds and no one did anything. Not the security, no one on the field even like noticed him. And then he just kind of like jogged off to the side behind the Nebraska benches and they got tackled. And I'm thinking to myself, what did I just watch? And like, it didn't impact the game at all. No one really even talked about it other than Mike Grimm, I think called him a red clown or something.
That's amazing.
But just a very strange part, but Dragan Kesich, God bless you, man. That left foot true from 47. Really happy for him.
Yeah.
Not only made it, but just nailed it.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't close. Yeah. I mean, it was just you have to give him credit, Ryan. You're right. Just a tremendous kick.
Yeah. Just again, you know, PJ really hammered home the point about poise, right? That's a lot of poise from him as well, having missed, you know, a kick earlier, et cetera. You know, kudos to him. Okay. Just some parting thoughts here. I saw a tweet that I actually really liked. This was from Gopher Rated following the game. And I'm going to actually probably read it more or less verbatim. But I want to get your guys' thoughts, as you look, you know, a day after this game, you know, a day after, you know, having watched it live and then gotten the opportunity to probably get a rewatch in, Gopher Rated called out a couple things is good. You know, they committed to the passing attack, right? They stuck with it, even if things went bad. Ethan was mobile and mostly accurate. And then Tyler Newbin in the defensive secondary really held up. For you, what were some of the good things you saw in this game? And Ryan, go ahead. You can start.
I think to that point in terms of Fleck adapting, that was the question we had, is what happens when the run game isn't going and you're in a tight contest? Do you commit to the pass? And they did. Now, I don't know that they really truly had a choice because they were so inefficient in the run game and they just knew that they weren't going to get anything consistent up front. But that's one of the questions we wanted to see was, in a big spot game, which a conference home game to start off the season is a big spot game. And one of the things that Fleck touched on afterwards in the press conference that at least resonated with me was, he goes, I want everybody to take everybody back to a game like this last year, AKA Iowa at home. It's 10-10 and we just don't make the plays. It hits our guy, goes to Jack Campbell and he runs the other way. He goes, same situation in this game. We get our chance, get across into opponent territory, and we actually make the plays to win the game. Now, again, how much of that was Minnesota went out and took it versus Nebraska gave it away? That's up to you. But to me, that was one of the things I wanted to see was, is Fleck willing to adapt? I think he was. But I will also continue to stress, I don't want to overreact to this game. I would almost rather underreact because I want to see what it looks like next week when they actually know what they're facing in an Eastern Michigan team. But do we want to see the run game get a lot better? Certainly. Running backs, offensive line. Do we want to see Greg Harbaugh and Ethan Kaliak-Manis in this receiving game get more explosive and more efficient? 100%. But I just tend to say that was the thing I wanted to see was, is PJ Fleck willing to not lean on the run when something goes wrong in the passing game, like your quarterback throwing an interception? I don't know that he was forced to, you know, I don't know that he had much of a choice is what I'll say, but that's what I wanted to see. Can the head coach adapt a little bit and can players make the plays to win a game like that? We didn't see it last year against Iowa. We did see it this year against Nebraska, Derek.
I think the two most positive takeaways I take out of this game are speed and athleticism on defense across the board, across the whole team on defense, all 11. That really stuck out to me, and that I think was different than years past. And they're certainly going to get challenged more from passing offenses. There's no doubt, and there will be new challenges, and we'll see how they do. But that stood out to me. And then secondly, probably the number one positive takeaway I took out were the question marks for me, or the unknowns, I should say, for me on defense. The results came back very positive, and that would be linebacker, especially linebacker outside Cody Lindenberg. And then I also was we didn't talk about him much, but Travion Jones impressed me. I think that was something, at least for me, because I don't follow the personnel as closely as Ryan. I worried about cornerbacks not named Justin Wally. Mm-hmm. I thought he played very well, particularly in special teams and some run stops. And he had a couple big gain saving tackles in pass and run. So I think he held his own. And so what I didn't see was any – with those – we combined those two sentiments, I didn't see any glaring holes on defense, and that's the biggest positive I take away.
I'll add to this, and Ryan, I think it's really, really good to have a healthy dose of, like, you know, not skepticism, but, like, let's pump the brakes a tiny bit and not get too excited, not to draw too many conclusions, right? But I was impressed, you know, with the defensive line coordinator change. We saw some sacks, but we also saw some additional pressure. And maybe more importantly, we saw them finish plays. You know, not saying they finished all of them, but you think about Danny Strigow's sack, right? You know, he's starting to get pressure and he actually trips him up and makes the sack, right? You saw Jalen Logan Redding, Ja Joyner get sacks. To me, you can see that the skill is there. And hopefully they can consistently. I'm not looking for five sacks a game. They only had three in this one, but you saw some drastic improvement than what we saw last year, or at least what it felt like drastic improvement to me here in this game one.
Yeah, and that's what you wanted to see was, again, I don't want to take a victory lap after one game in terms of declaring the Brick Haley.
Well, and Nebraska's offensive line. Season
in terms of that underachieving unit. Yeah. Was this a good first step? 100%. That's the point you were trying to make. Nothing more than that. But I guess I would also pose this question to you, Lou. You know, I'm getting a lot of questions now. What do you think the Gopher ceiling is? What do you think? What do you think the record is? I don't know that my opinion has changed much on this team. I thought they were going to be 7-5. Do you still think somewhere around 8-4 for you?
Yeah, I still think the reality is I can see a plausible explanation for 6-6 to 9-3. I think any of those can happen. I really do. I really believe any of those
to me
happen.
Now, what you think of the offense? Like, if you want to be bullish on the offense, because I think the defense's floor just keeps you in every single game. I'll say it again. Joe Rossi's defense has kept opposing offenses to under 20 points in now 7 straight games. That'll likely continue through Eastern Michigan, and then it'll be certainly put to the test against Drake May in North Carolina. But that's also my point, is if the defense, like they were able to do in this game, where that third quarter was just a disaster, and even going into the fourth quarter was a disaster, but you looked up at the scoreboard, you're only down 4 or 7 points. So it's manageable and you can give yourself a chance still. But it just comes down to if the defense is going to play, or maybe give yourself, maybe this Gopher defense gets 15%, 20% more turnovers this year. Well, you're hoping that the offense can find a way to more efficiency, both in the run and pass game, some more explosive plays. But if they don't, okay, 6-6. If they do, boy, you can see why this could be a very fun season. You could see why. I mean, I said, you know, I think there's 4 teams that can win the West. Still think that. Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and Minnesota. Probably in that order, more or less. But it comes down to me, can the offense find efficiency with a first-year coordinator or a first-year play caller with Ethan Kaliak-Manis in his first real year as the starter? How do they continue to kind of mesh, and how does this new work Minnesota Moving Company continue to try and find their feet?
All right. Well, we want to thank everybody for listening. It's just so fun to talk about real football again and really breaking down games. Derek, appreciate you coming back and helping us break down this. Your expertise is always appreciated, but not only by us, but by our listeners. And we look forward to many more breakdowns this season. We'll be back to preview the Eastern Michigan game. Again, thank you for listening. Go Gophers.